Jamie and his little group pulled out of Sicaro at about the same time Ace and Pike and his bunch left Las Vegas, and Falcon rode out of Santa Fe. Asa could have saved several days riding time by cutting across country, but that would have been a dangerous route due to the Indians. Instead, they followed the stage route, a winding, curving road that first went to Santa Fe before cutting south. That move put Falcon well ahead of them. He arrived in Albuquerque one day before his father. Falcon could get along in Spanish just like his pa, so he gravitated to Old Town and got himself a room above a cantina. Falcon told the owner of the hotel to reserve a block of rooms. He had some friends coming in. The younger McAllister had no way of knowing which direction his pa would be coming from, but on a hunch, he rode out to the southern edge of town to a cantina there. He bought a bottle of tequila and sat outside under the awning. His hunch proved correct on the second day. Falcon heard riders coming and looked up. He smiled. There was no mistaking that monster his pa rode. Falcon stood up and stepped out to the edge of the road. He didn't know any of the men with his paw, but with the exception of the young man, they were well seasoned, looking like they wouldn't be afraid to tackle an angry grizzly. When the dust had settled, Jamie looked down from the saddle.
Boy, what the hell are you doing down here?
You fellas light and see it. There's big trouble just around the bend.
Do tell.
I don't have to ask who this boy is. That boy looks just like you, Mac.
For a fact he do. And appears to be right capable, too.
I bet you he's hell with the ladies.
Not no more he ain't. Marie would cut his dingies off if she found out about any dallying on his part.
I'm Rick.
Well, howdy, Rick. Where in the hell did you meet up with this disreputable bunch of old codgers?
Seated at a table inside the coolness of the cantina, Falcon handed his paw the telegram he'd received. Jamie held the paper out at arm's length, but still couldn't make out the damn words until he put on his reading glasses.
At least you can read words. I never learned how myself.
How long you been out here, Mr. Logan?
Not Mr., just Logan. I was 20 years old when I crossed the Mississippi, and... oh, let me see now. It were 18 and 29, I think.
Ace of Pike, I remember him. I put lead in him up in Medicine Bows. Little no-name mining town that was nearly deserted. That was 2 years ago. This ain't your fight, boys.
Hell, it ain't.
Yeah. You think you're gonna have all the fun, Max? You got another thing coming.
We're pards, ain't we?
You done me a good turn. I'm staying.
6-1 odds, boys, at least.
Makes it all that more interesting.
Falcon led the group into Old Town and to the hotel. The men cleaned up and put on their best, be it buckskin or broadcloth, and went into the cafe for supper. They had just ordered when two men wearing badges approached the table.
You boys just passing through?
That's right. Something on your mind?
Avoiding trouble.
I've always found that to be a good practice. Personally, I'm a peace-loving man.
Mr. McAllister, we don't want trouble here in Albuquerque. And for the last 2.5 years, everywhere you've been, there was trouble. Who are you hunting here?
No one. Now, someone may be hunting me, but I'm not looking for anyone. Me and the boys here are just seeing some country and trying to keep our hair in the process.
Don't be in town long.
Couple of days to rest the horses and resupply, and then we're gone.
See you around.
Jamie waited until the men had left the cafe.
They know something's up. The law must be in touch with each other.
They got them talking wires all over the damn place, if the engines ain't cut them, which they do regular. But I don't know if they got them here or not.
What do you have in mind, Paul?
Minding my own business, son. Now, I'm not looking for trouble, but I ain't running from it either.
Then you didn't really lie to those deputies, did you, Mr. McAllister?
Not exactly.
You can bet they're going to have their peepers peeled on us.
Let them look. There ain't no law against drinking and eating and sitting around jawing.
That is a fact, isn't it?
Indian trouble pulled the deputies and a large posse of civilians out of Albuquerque on the third morning after Jamie's arrival. 1 hour later, Ace of Pike and his bunch rode in. Jamie had hired a couple of young Mexican boys to watch the roads and to report back to him when they spotted any large groups of men riding in. 10 minutes after Asa and his bunch rode in, Jamie knew about it. He gave each of the boys some money, told one to watch the men and to report back to him once they left the hotel. He told the other one to warn the citizens around Old Town to get ready to seek cover at his signal. The residents of Old Town knew all about Jamie Ian McAllister, and knew he treated every person the same, regardless of color. Knew some of his grandkids had married into Mexican families. Since they had arrived in Old Town, Jamie and the men with him had been respectful and polite to the Mexican community, and the residents of Old Town began doing some planning on their own. Asa Pike and his men cleaned up and got something to eat. Then they returned to their hotel rooms and slept the remainder of the night. Just as dawn was cracking open the cover of dark and the residents of Albuquerque were beginning to stir, Asa and his men left the hotel and began their walk to Old Town. They each carried at least 2 pistols. Some had spare pistols tucked behind their belts, and they all carried rifles.
They on their way, Pa. I figured 32 of them, counting Asa.
They must be really afeard of us. I fought off more Injuns than that by my lonesome a time or twice.
You little boys, pass the word around. Everybody inside and keep their heads down.
The boys ran off to spread the word.
You boys ready to crank up the band?
I've been ready.
Let's get this over with so as we can eat. I've done developed a liking for this Mexican food.
What you developed a liking for is that fat cook Isabella at the cafe.
I does like a maple. More to love. And they's warm on a cold night.
Yeah, so's a bear, but I don't want to snuggle up to one.
You all right?
I've been down this road before. I ain't no cherry when it comes to gun hawking.
Wait a minute. I got you pegged now. It took me a time, but I knew it would come to me. You faced 4 men in that saloon over in El Paso a couple of years back.
They got lead in me.
But you killed all 4 of them.
For a fact.
And before that, a bully braced you in Fort Worth and you dropped him. Yeah, I know who you are now. How come you were so down on your luck when we connected?
I got all those damn Kermit brothers and all their kin and such out of Arkansas after me. Now, I can't hold a job long enough to get ahead none. I get a job, they show up, and they about 100 of them.
What'd you do to them?
Well, I was hanging around Little Rock a while back when this pretty little golden-haired lady started batting her eyes and swishing her bustle at me, and we ended up on a blanket down by a creek under Trey. Well, I didn't know she was married, and I sure didn't know she was married to Herman Kermit. Well, he called me out later on that night. Well, he missed, and I did. I've been dodging all them damn Kermits ever since.
That sounds like something Falcon used to do.
Oh, Pa.
Don't all Pa me. I recollect that time you was all snuggled up to that Sadie Lovington woman. Her husband caught you both bare-assed in the barn.
I kept telling you and Ma I didn't know she was married.
I thought I was going to have to shoot Clyde Lovington. That was one of the funniest sights I ever saw. You as naked as the day you were born, and your Ma 2 steps behind swinging that quirt. She'd connect on your bare ass, and you'd jump about 3 feet in the air and squall like a puma.
You sure have a good memory.
Now, how old were you?
He was 15, and Sadie would never see 30 again. That woman sure liked to spread her charms around. Of course, I will have to say that when you were 15, you looked 21.
Thank you for that.
But acted like you were 10.
Oh, shit, can we just drop the subject?
Jamie Ian McAllister! I be Asa Pike, and I'm here to revenge myself. Step out here and face me.
Well, here we go.
Jamie stepped around the corner of the building. He walked toward the man, standing tall and straight in the center of the block. Jamie was closing the distance fast. He had his eyes already picked out on the spot where he was going to jump after he fired the greener.
You tried to kill me, Pike. Tried to bushwhack me.
You're a damn liar, McAllister. I ain't no back shooter. Draw, damn you.
Just then, a rock came flying out from an alley and struck Asa on the back of the head, just under his hat brim.
Ugh.
The man dropped like a brick, his gun still in leather.
What the hell?
Jamie realized what a vulnerable position he was in and quickly moved to one side, pressing up against the building. Asa Pike hadn't moved. He was out cold. Jamie slipped into the alley. He didn't see two small boys run out of a nearby building. One pulled Ace's pistols from their holsters, and the other grabbed up his rifle, leaving the man defenseless. Then they both jerked off Ace's boots, leaving him barefoot in the street. The boots were tossed into a watering trough, and the boys vanished. Wondering who the hell was screaming, Falcon peeked around the corner of a building in time to see a woman lean out of a window and smash a club down on a man's head. A man dropped to the street unconscious. Two boys raced out and grabbed his weapons and boots.
What the hell?
Logan slipped down an alley and ducked into a recessed doorway when he heard the scrape of boots on bricks. Logan peeked out and grinned at the sight. Two boys were removing the man's guns, boots, and trousers, leaving him bare butt naked from the waist down.
Ooh, that's about the ugliest sight I ever did see.
Oh, my fucking God! Oh, God, oh, God, oh, God, help me! Oh, for the love of God, help me!
Rick froze. Then he watched a man come staggering out into the street, both hands holding his bleeding buttocks. Someone had slashed the man deeply with a machete across both cheeks. The man limped painfully up the street.
Ah! Oh my God! I just stepped in a bear trap! Oh God, my ankle's broke! Help me! Help!
What are you doing, McAllister? Why don't you stand and fight, you yellow belly bastard?
Because I can't find anybody to fight, you idiot.
Hot water had been dumped on one of Asa Pike's men from a woman on a balcony. His hat saved his face from being badly burned, but his shoulders and arms were scalded. Red watched a man stumble up the street, both hands to his bleeding face. A heavy rock had smashed his cheek, knocking out several teeth and putting a large gash in his face.
What the hell is going on?
Where's my goddamn paint? Somebody stole my paint!
Ah! McAllister's got engines working for me! Oh, my ass is on fire, I tell you! I can't reach the air and pull it out!
Asa Pike had recovered from his stoning.
Fall back! Fall back! There's too much trickery here! Back to the hotel!
The unconscious men were located and dragged off. The jaws of the bear trap were sprung, freeing the trapped man. Someone found a serape and handed it to the half-naked man.
You cowardly bastards will pay for this! You ain't seen the last of us, and that, by God, is a promise!
An arrow came out of nowhere and embedded itself in the man's leg.
Ah!
Jamie and his group had not fired a shot.
Damnedest gunfight I ever been in.
These folks here in this part of town is nice folks, but they played a dangerous game. Those kids could have been hurt real bad.
I'll pass the word for the people to stay out of it from now on. They'll agree unless Ace and his people bother them. But it was funny.
I make it 8 hurt to one degree or another. 3 of them with knots on their heads.
I just like fighting a person I can't put a name to. They're not counting Injuns, of course.
Name or no names, they'll be back. We can bet on that. And this time, they'll be coming in loaded for bear.
Well, I can't get no readier. But what I can do is amble over to the cafe and get me something to eat.
You mean you're going over to see Isabella?
That too, boy.
One by one, the men began gathering in Valley, Colorado. 2 groups of 5 each. One group had been hired by Andrea Petri. The second group by Russell Clay. To each other, hard cases are as easy to identify as skunks. And by evening, the men were gathering and talking at the Wild Rose Saloon.
Them folks that hired us is quality. So how come they're so interested in one colored fella?
You're right, Gibson. Sure more here than meets the eye. You talk about this long enough, might figure out a way to make us some money.
Matt, if we can figure out what the hell's going on.
Them folks that hired us, they want the paper burned down and the man's house burned. Why? I went over the back issues. There ain't nothing in there about nobody in San Francisco. You went over the same papers, Carnes. You didn't find nothing bad writ about anybody in Denver. So what's going on? I think it's something else. I think this editor has something the folks want destroyed.
What could it be?
I don't know. But I bet you I'm going to find out, or my name ain't Sterling Drake.
Having become irritated at the Jones brothers' inability to carry out even the simplest of assignments, the brothers were not exceptionally swift in the brain department. Russell Clay had told them to hit the road months back. After committing a series of petty crimes and two badly bungled and unsuccessful holdups, the brothers arrived in Albuquerque on the afternoon of the aborted shootout. After hearing all the talk about the blood feud, the brothers decided to pitch their lot with Asa Pike and his kin.
Why? I owe Jamie McAllister, and me and my brother Lloyd here aim to put lead in him.
Then you're welcome to join us.
What'd he do to you?
I'd rather not discuss it.
When do we take him?
Dawn, tomorrow. I've sent McAllister word.
Why don't we just go on down there now and just shoot him?
It's a matter of honor.
Meanwhile, Jamie and his friends met in a cantina in Old Town to mull over the latest news.
Shit, that man sure loves the crack of dawn.
I've got to say that these ain't the smartest of boys I've ever run up on. Every one of them appears to be about two eggs short of a dozen.
They got guns and know how to use them.
That do make up for being a tad stumpy in the brain department, don't it?
It'll be no fun and games come the dawning. They'll be moving in for the kill. Whole thing's stupid and pointless, but none of us can allow that to override hard facts. It's kill or be killed. I wish they'd just ride on and leave us alone, but they're not gonna do that. So how many options does that leave us?
Just the one, I figure.
Falcon, we haven't had much of a chance to talk, son. What's been happening back home?
Well, it's been quiet, Pa. Baby's being born. Town's got two new businesses. Valley is now officially the county seat of government. Of course, we all knew it would be. Big brother Jamie is getting fat in the butt from all that easy living. It's awful hard for me to believe that he's pushing 50. It just doesn't seem possible.
Jamie Ian is 46, I believe. I never was much good at dates. I always left that up to your ma. Lord, where have the years gone? I'm an old man, son. An old man.
Oh, now you ain't neither, Pa. You're stronger than most men and can ride as good as ever. You might have some years on you, but you're a long ways from being an old man. Besides, I've seen the way women look at you.
There'll never be another woman in my life, son. The only woman I ever loved was your ma. She's a constant with me. I can't tell you how much I miss her. Well, we'd all best order something to eat and turn in early. Come to dawning, we're all gonna be right busy.
At dawn, Old Town was buttoned up tight. The occasional chicken or dog wandered the streets, but no horses were visible, and no citizen left his home. There was no wind, but the day was cool. Jamie stood under an awning and finished his after-breakfast coffee. He set the empty cup down on a bench and picked up a sawed-off shotgun, loading both barrels. Falcon was across the street. His tailored suit coat swept back to reveal his twin pearl-handled pistols. Another pistol was shoved behind his belt, and he carried a .32 caliber short-barreled pistol in a shoulder holster rig. The old mountain man, Logan, was about 50 yards away, lounging in front of a closed General Mercantile store. He picked up his rifle and waited. Cammy stood to Jamie's right in the mouth of an alley. Rick was leaning up against a hitch rail. Red was waiting on the stoop of a saddle and gunshot.
They come, senor!
Fine. Now you and your friend go on home and stay there.
Si, senor!
This time I don't wait for them to come to me.
Jamie stepped out into the street and started walking toward the edge of Old Town. Falcon walked over and fell in step with his father. Logan and Cammy stepped out and followed, one on each side of him in the street, just slightly to Jamie's rear. Rick and Red stayed close to the storefronts. Suddenly, one of the pikemen stepped out from an alley.
You dishonored our family name, McAllister!
You're an idiot!
Now you die!
Not this day.
Jamie kept on walking while he pulled out the empty and shoved in a fresh round. Suddenly, the street was filled with men, all of whom held pistols at the ready.
Separate!
Retreat, boys! Retreat!
the gun smoke began drifting away, 13 men lay sprawled in the street, dead, dying, or badly hurt. Jamie walked over to a dying man and looked down.
Did I ever do a hurt to you?
Can't say as you have. Not till this day, anyways.
Then what is the point of all this death and suffering?
Family, you understand that?
I don't understand it when Asa was clearly in the wrong by attacking me a couple years back.
He still can. And blood is thicker than water.
Well, that makes you a fool.
And a dead one at that.
This one over here is gonna make it, I think.
Jamie walked over.
You'll have to kill us all. And the mountains back to home is filled with pikes and kin.
Got another one over here that might make it.
Jamie walked over and looked down at him. The young man was about Rick's age.
This one ain't hurt too bad.
Jamie stepped over a couple dead men and looked down.
Ugh. I hate you damn McAllisters.
Why? I never saw you before today.
Everything comes to y'all easy.
What the hell's he talking about, Pa?
I don't know.
The rest of us have to hard scrabble for anything we have.
I think he must be delicious.
Delirious.
Whatever.
And folks like you should share with folks like us.
Holy shit. You boys collect all our guns, and we'll see about getting the wounded to doctors.
Why? They got themselves shot. They can see to easing their own suffering.
Jamie smiled. The breed of men called Mountain Men were the toughest, hardest, and most pragmatic group to ever wander the West. Just as the guns were being collected and put in cloth sacks, a doctor and several citizens showed up and took over the care and the transporting of the wounded.
Way I got it figured, Pa, we still got about 19 or 20 to deal with, and I don't figure they'll be inclined to give it up and go on back home.
No, we haven't seen the last of it, unfortunately.
What do you want done with these guns?
We'll give them to the law. They can do whatever they want with them.
Ain't no law here. They're all out after Injuns. We get to handle all this our own damn selves. Suits me fine.
The Undertaker rolled up in his black hearse and solemnly looked around all the bodies. He turned to his assistant.
Go back and get another wagon. And tell Abel to start knocking together some boxes. Make them long boxes. These are tall men. Go on now. Step lively.
Jamie and his men backed off and stayed clear, but at the ready in case Asa wanted to continue to fight today. Within minutes, a man stepped into the plaza, unarmed and holding a stick with a white handkerchief tied to it.
I'm not armed, but I'm kin to these men. I've come to see to their proper burial.
I hope you got some money. This is going to get expensive.
We have money. We want a nice service with mourners, and a drum, and a horn.
What the hell are they gonna do? Have a dance or a bury?
Let's get out of here.
The funeral started about mid-afternoon that day. Even from where Jamie and his bunch were seated in front of the hotel, they could hear the sounds. Logan walked out onto the side of the street and tried to get a dance step going. The old mountain man was uncommonly spry for his age.
I wish they'd pick up the beat some. I can't get no rhythm going with that. At least the engine's got some pep to their drumming.
Pa, I gotta say that when you pick men to ride with, you can come up with some characters.
You'd be hard-pressed to find better men to ride with, though.
I won't argue that.
Jamie and Falcon sat for a time watching Logan do some dance steps in time with the music.
Pa?
Huh?
What are you gonna do with the rest of your life?
Providing we can get out of here alive. I'm gonna see some country, boy.
And just wander, Pa?
That's about it. Hell, boy, I got more money than I could spend in 10 lifetimes. I sure don't need to look for a job. I'm not gonna hang around Valley doing nothing.
Hey, I think I got it now.
Logan did a slow pirouette to the drum and horn.
Well, keep it to yourself. It might be catching.
Hey, Mac.
Huh?
When we get this here little mess took care of, what say we head over into Arizona territory?
That sounds good to me. You know anybody over there?
Nary a soul, but I always wanted to see the Muggio.
Well, sure, why not? And no, Falcon, you can't come alone. You've got a family to look after.
Never entered my mind.
You lie like a dog.
Rick walked up, looked at Logan for a moment, then shook his head in disbelief and handed Jamie a note. Logan stopped his dancing and wandered over as Jamie opened the folded piece of paper.
Little boy, just give this to me.
Old abandoned buildings north of town, noon tomorrow, Asa Pike.
That's what's left of an old village built back in the late 1700s. Me and a half dozen of the boys camped there one night back in, 44, 45, I reckon it was.
Let's sort of ease on out there now. Find ourselves some good fighting positions and get ready.
Why don't we just hide and ambush the bastards when they come riding up? Then we'll have done with it, and we can get going to the Muggy Olds.
Logan, you's a sneaky old bastard, you know that?
Damn right I am, and I'm alive because of it. You best remember that, Haynes.
Jamie didn't say anything, but he agreed with Logan.
Let's provision up. Then when it's over, we can just head on west without having to come back here and answer a bunch of damn fool questions.
Good idea.
The funerals were still underway when Jamie and the group checked out of the hotel in Old Town and rode out.
Most depressing damn music I ever did hear. If you boys have to plant me, I want somebody to whistle a happy tune, and the rest of you do a jig over my resting place. I'd hate to have to spend eternity with the sounds of that sorrowful mess ringing through my bones.
I'll do a fancy jig right on top of your grave.
I didn't say collapse the damn thing. Big as your feet is, you'd cause an earthquake. Just dance around the hole, will you?
Asa Pike halted his men about a half mile from the ruins of the village. Jamie watched through field glasses as the men dismounted and bunched up for a few minutes. Then they picketed their horses and spread out, walking slowly, advancing toward the ruins in a long, straight line. The men in the ruins looked on in silence for a few minutes as the Pike group slowly advanced.
Well, if this ain't the dumbest thing I ever saw. Yonder they come in plain sight and all bunched up. Hell, they're going to be tired from all that walking by the time they get here.
Get into position. We're going to settle this thing today once and for all.
Well, this is nuts, Paul. They act like they want to get killed.
Hell, I can't bring myself to shoot them.
I can, but I want them at least a tad goddamn closer.
When the advancing men were about 100 yards away, Jamie abruptly stood up.
Asa, this doesn't have to be. Let's call this thing off and go on about our business.
You go right to hell, McAllister!
Asa then lifted his rifle and triggered off a round. Jamie dropped down behind cover.
I believe they just opened the dance.
Fire!
When the smoke cleared, 12 of Asa's kin were on the ground. And those left were running back to their horses as fast as they could. They pulled the picket pins, jumped into saddles, and were gone without looking back.
I have been in some strange tussles in my time, but this here's got to be the strangest ever.
I saw sights just like it during the war. Brave men doing foolish things. Let's go see how many are wounded.
6 men were dead. 6 were wounded. Rick and Falcon went to get their horses, while Jamie and the others saw to their wounds as best they could with what they had. Of the 6 wounded, 2 only had minor wounds, 3 were hard hit, and 1 would probably not last a day. The badly wounded man died at noon, just as the county sheriff, his deputies, and a doctor were riding up. Falcon and the others had spread out, the muzzles of their rifles pointed at the sheriff and his men. At this range, if any shooting started, it would be carnage. Jamie had exchanged his rifle for the green. In this close-up, that terrible weapon could easily take out 2 or 3 men and not leave much to write home about.
Good God. You and your men are under arrest, McAllister. Surrender your weapons.
Not likely.
Mr. McAllister, over the past 2 days, you and your people have killed or wounded 26 men. At least. Not counting Indian attacks, this is the worst shootout this county's ever experienced.
They didn't start it. We did.
Yeah, that's what I heard. McAllister, are you men leaving this area?
Yeah, today if possible.
Thank God. Fine. That's dandy. The best news I've heard in days. You can leave whenever you like. The sooner, the better. Personally, I hope I never see any of you again.
You need some help toting these folks back to town?
No, hell no. I want you people gone.
Then we'll be heading for home. Springtime in Colorado is a beautiful sight.
I'm anxious to see it.
I'm a deputy sheriff up in Valley, Colorado. My brother is a county sheriff. I want you to tell Asa Pike something for me, Sheriff. You tell him if I ever lay eyes on him in Valley, I'll kill him where he stands, and I won't hesitate.
I'll see he gets a word.
And I mean what I say, Sheriff.
Yeah, I got no doubt about that.
Jamie and his people turned and walked to their horses. 2 minutes later, they were riding north.
Well, that could have got real ugly in a hurry.
It ain't over. I can promise you that. As long as there's one Pike or kin left alive, he'll be hunting Jamie Ian McAllister and his kin.
And that makes you a family of fools.
Just a few miles north of the ruins, Jamie and his group hooked up with a bunch of Teamsters heading north to Santa Fe. Jamie said goodbye to Falcon and watched as his son rode off with the wagons.
That's a mighty fine boy there, Mac. How many kids did you say you had?
9 living. Falcon's the youngest. The ages range from 46 to 34.
Fever got the others?
Bounty hunters looking for me killed baby Karen when she was about 6 months old. Down in the big thicket country of East Texas. Back in 29.
I reckon I don't have to ask what happened to them men.
No, you don't. Let's ride.
In the Valley Dispatch newspaper office, Matthew McAllister was questioning the typesetter in his capacity as sheriff.
Paul, you seen Ben Washington today?
Not hide nor hair of him, Sheriff. He never been this late.
You reckon he's with his fiancée, Lola?
No, she was by here looking for him. She's worried sick.
I don't like this. Not at all.
What could have happened to him in Valley?
I don't know, but I damn sure plan on finding out.
After carefully searching the town for over an hour, Matthew and his deputies knew one thing for certain. Ben F. Washington had vanished, as had his horse. The alarm was sounded, and townspeople turned out armed and mounted, and each man with a 3-day supply of food. Matthew sent groups out in all directions. From the saddle, the sheriff looked down into the worried face of Lola. Lola Dubois, a beautiful mulatto from New Orleans, come to town one day and within weeks had bought the hotel and started redecorating it. It was the most elegant hotel outside of Denver. She had named it the La Pierre. She and Ben had been keeping company for months, and recently Ben had proposed to her and Lola had accepted his offer of marriage.
Lola, if he's within 50 miles of here, we'll find him. He may have gone for an early morning ride and just got lost. It's easy to do. And we know his horse is missing. We'll find him. Let's go, men.
But Matthew didn't think Ben was lost. He felt certain that Ben had been taken against his will. But why was the question? There was no trace of Ben F. Washington to be found. Matthew's Indian trackers could turn up nothing. Ben had vanished without a trace. Matthew and his weary posse rode back to Valley. Matthew went immediately to the hotel to see Lola with the bad news. He found her in the cafe. She took the news as calmly as possible. Matthew could see she was shaking, but struggling to maintain composure. She waved him to a table and brought coffee.
It has to be either his mother or his uncle behind this sheriff, or both of them. He told me several times that he knew they were still alive and would someday try to kill him. There have been attempts on his life.
I know. Ben's told me the whole sorry story. And we'll find Ben, Lola. He's got to be in this area. Every farmer, rancher, cowboy, and trapper in a 75-mile radius is looking. I think they're close, Lola. I feel it. I don't know where.
Matthew went to his office and found several wires waiting for him from various lawmen, some as far away as San Francisco. The San Francisco wire read, "Received word from my street informants that 5 thugs are heading your way. Stop. Stone Gibson, Billy Carnes, Nate Clapton, Eric Armour, Pete Drew. Stop. All are known hooligans and strong-arm men. Stop. All have been arrested for suspicion of murder but no convictions. Stop. They're bad ones. Stop. Be careful with them. The wire from Denver read, 5 local thugs believed headed your way. Stop. Jack Wallace, Marcus Hinton, Sterling Drake, Jeff Hooks, Carter Young. Stop. All have criminal records and capable of doing anything. Stop. Believe them to be involved in some sort of kidnapping scheme. Stop. Watch yourself. Matthew leaned back in his chair and put his boots up on the desk. It made sense to him that Ben's mother and uncle were in San Francisco and Denver, living under assumed names, and they had to be the ones who hired the men to kidnap Ben. But where in the hell were they holding him? From her front porch, Jamie's daughter Jolene called out to her 14-year-old teenage girl.
Kathy Lou, you go on up and dust off things in your grandpa's house. You can ride that paint your Uncle Falcon gentled for you. I'll be up later on.
Yes, Ma.
Kathy Lou liked to go up and be alone at her grandpa's house. The place was filled with so many pictures and old books and pillows with fancy stitching on them from her Grandma Kate. She liked to sit in her grandma's rocker in the big living room and look through the old family Bible. She threw a saddle on the paint pony and hopped on. She'd ride by that Johnny Scott's house on the way and wave at him. She pinched her cheeks to get a little color in them before Johnny saw her and rode off at a gallop. Benjamin Franklin Washington was unconscious, again. He was tied to a chair, and his chin rested on his chest, blood dripping from his mouth, numerous cuts on his face, and his nose busted.
What the hell do we do now? We don't want to kill him, and he can't take much more beating on.
You're working at the wrong end, Stone. Nigger ain't got no sense in his head, it's all in his pecker. Threaten to cut his pecker off, he'll tell you everything he knows.
So would I. And so would any man. Stone, I'm beginning to think the Dark is telling the truth. I don't think he's got anything that's a threat to anybody.
You may be right about that. But we'll hammer on him a little bit more. Throw a bucket of water on him and get him awake.
Kathy Lou hopped down from the pony and stood for a moment. She thought she heard something coming from the small barn. But that was impossible. Grandpa Jamie had been gone for months. All his livestock was out at Uncle Falcon's ranch. She shook her head and walked up to the front porch to stand for a moment. There was quite a view from up there. The town of Valley lay peaceful looking a few miles away. She could see almost the entire town. Could almost pick out her house. She turned and opened the door. Rough hands grabbed her and jerked her inside. One hand was clamped down over her mouth while the free hand roamed her body.
Would you just look at the titties on this one. Man, she is right for the picking. Ow! God damn it, she bit me!
Pain exploded in Kathy Lou's head as he clubbed her with a fist. Armor began tearing her clothes off.
You just sit her down, honey. I got something you're gonna like.
Kathy's eyes found Ben tied to a chair, his face all bloody and swollen. He was unconscious. She felt herself lifted off the floor. Armor carried her into the bedroom and dumped her on the bed.
You scream, little girlie, and I'll hurt you something awful. You understand?
Kathy nodded her head while the man was pulling off his clothing.
That's good. You just lay back and enjoy this.
Rough hands roamed all over her. Flesh, fondling her breasts, her body, all the secret places. Kathy couldn't help herself.
Stop!
Get up, bitch! Here, save a rag in the mouth. Don't see me cry!
Armor's nakedness covered her. It was the beginning of a long and painful afternoon for 14-year-old Kathy Lou Kinsley. The bacon fried, Jamie dumped slices of potato and bits of onion into the grease and watched them sizzle. Bread was ready in another pan. The men filled their plates with food and their cups with coffee and settled back against their saddles to enjoy the evening meal.
This do smell good. Gets my mouth to salivating something fierce.
There's a trading post up here on the Puerco River. I figure we're 2 days ride from it. and the country gets rough and wild, but it's some pretty.
You reckon what's left of them Pikes will be following us, Mac?
Not if they're smart.
Smart they ain't, but at least we cut them down to size.
I was told there's a little cow town that was settled 2-3 years ago on the Little Colorado River. It's called Horsehead Crossing. We can resupply there and then cut south into the Muggyomes.
And if we're lucky, we won't see another human being for days. It's getting crowded out here.
Is there any gold to be found down in the Muggyomes?
I expect. But one thing that there's plenty of is Apaches. We got Hopis and Navajos all around us now. And we'll be riding right through Zuni country. The Papagos is way down south, near the Mex border. Havasupai Indians is over to the west and some north. When I first come through here, there wasn't no white men. I recollect that we scared the piss out of some Indians. They didn't know what to make of us. Didn't know what the hell we was. When we fired our guns, them Indians scattered like the wind. You and me and Red and Canby. Now we're the last of a breed. You know that, Mac?
I've been told. But men like my Falcon and Rick here, they'll carry on and travel the trails that we blazed.
For a fact. Wonder how things is back in your little town of Valley, Mac.
Oh, all right, I imagine. Not much happens up there.
At mid-afternoon, Jolene hitched up the buggy and drove first to town to pick up some things at the store. She gossiped for a time with some ladies, talked with all about the disappearance of Ben, and then she drove up to Jamie's cabin. Out of long habit, Jolene carried a little .41 over and under Derringer in the side pocket of her dress. Valley had been long settled. There was still the occasional thug or hooligan who wandered through. Although doing harm to a woman in the West was just about the best way known to wind up on the wrong end of a rope. Kathy's paint pony was standing dejectedly at the hitch rail. Jolene walked up to the porch, opened the front door to her pa's cabin, and stepped into hell. Rough hands grabbed her before she could get to her pistol. She was flung to the floor. Fist exploded pain in Jolene's head. She slipped into a cloudy haze just as her legs were being spread apart. After having their way with Jolene and Kathy Lou, the outlaws panicked and fled. What sense they possessed had returned to them, and they knew that if found, there wouldn't be any trial. They would either be hanged or shot on the spot, or worse. In the West, rapists had been known to be dragged to death, stoned, buried up to their chins in anthills, or staked out naked in the sun to slowly die. The outlaws had tried to set fire to the cabin, but shortly after they rode away, the fire went out. Kathy Lou was naked and unconscious on the bed. Ben was still tied to the chair, swimming in and out of consciousness. Jolene was naked and unconscious on the floor, having been clubbed on the head and left for dead after the men were through with her. Ben managed to start his chair rocking from side to side until it toppled over. He then struggled, still tied to the chair, toward the open front door and out onto the porch. There, he shoved too hard with his feet and threw himself off the porch, hitting his head on the steps. He dropped once more into darkness. Pat McKenzie got worried when he came home from the fields and Jolene and Kathy Lou were gone. The other kids didn't know where they were, but the buggy was gone and so was Kathy Lou's paint pony. Pat paced the floor for a time and then rode into town, heading for Matthew's office. He passed the Scott boy along the way and hailed him down.
Johnny, you seen Kathy Lou?
I seen her hours ago, Mr. McKenzie, heading up toward her grandpa's place. Then I see Mrs. McKenzie heading up that way about 2 hours or so ago in the buggy.
Come on, Johnny, ride with me. Something's very wrong about this.
As soon as Pat rode up to the cabin, he saw Ben lying by the front steps, unconscious and bloody and tied to the chair.
Ride like the wind, Johnny. Ring the alarm bell and get Matthew and the doctor up here. Go, boy!
Yes, sir!
Pat looked in the house.
Oh, my God.
He quickly composed himself and found blankets to cover the nakedness of the women. He knew better than to try to move them until the doctor arrived. He went to Ben, bathing the man's face until Ben regained consciousness.
Outlaws. Jolene and Kathy.
They're alive, but just barely.
Pat cut the ropes that bound Ben and got another blanket to cover him with. Matthew Morgan and Doc Prentice jumped out of their saddles. Prentice looked at Pat and started to kneel down beside Ben.
See to the women in the house. They've been used very badly.
Deputy, get a posse together and get on the trail. I'll be alone.
I wish Pa was here.
In a way, I'm glad he's not.
The outlaws rode hard for several miles, then cut southwest, heading for the area where Utah, Colorado, Arizona, and New Mexico meet. They weren't really thinking, just riding in what at first was no more than a blind panic. Back in Valley, no one knew how to get in touch with Falcon, and they certainly had no idea where Jamie might be. The posse trailed the outlaws for a week, then lost them in a heavy rain shortly after entering the San Juans. Matthew reluctantly turned back. Kathy Lou would be all right, with a lot of love from family and friends. But Jolene lay in a coma. The family could do nothing but wait. The stage drivers began passing the word all up and down the line, leaving messages at relay stations. It might take months, but eventually Jamie would get the message. It was a tired and dusty group of men who rode into the newly formed and raw cow town of Holbrook. Because of recent Indian trouble, the town was the westernmost stopping point on the stage line for the time being. The stage had not yet arrived, but then it was seldom on time. Sometimes it was several days late. When it did arrive, it was often peppered with bullet holes and had so many arrows sticking out of the coach, it resembled a large porcupine. No one gave that much attention. Jamie and friends stabled their weary horses, rubbing them down and seeing that they had water and food before seeking comforts for themselves. The men had their spare clothing washed and ironed while they soaked and scrubbed and soaked in tubs of hot water behind the barbershop, and then had haircuts and shaves. When they began to once more resemble human beings, they dressed and found a place to have a drink and then get something to eat that someone else had cooked, served on real plates. The marshal of the town had spotted the men as they rode in and gave them time to get cleaned up before he ambled over for a closer look-see at the strangers. Glass of beer in hand, the marshal took a seat at an adjoining table.
You boys have any Indian trouble on your way in?
Not a bit. We were spotted a number of times, but for whatever reason, they left us alone.
I ain't trying to nose in your business, boys. But any news about engines and road conditions is welcome here.
The road was all right. We did check out some smoke and found a settler's house that had been set on fire. That was a good day's ride east of here. There wasn't a living soul about, and no bodies. Corral was empty.
House set south on the road?
Yep.
The Sanders Ranch. They were sure they could make friends with the Indians and live in peace.
They probably did with the Hopi and Zuni and the Navajo. But not with the Apache. I've been roaming the West since rain was wet, and I ain't never seen a more disagreeable bunch of people than them goddamn Apaches. Hell, I even got along with the Pawnee and the Blackfoot, most of the time.
No sign of bodies, eh?
Nope, but they might have been caught in the house when they burned. They were buried under the debris when the roof collapsed.
Better that than be taken prisoner. You boys ever come up on what's left of a man or woman after the Apaches got done having fun with them?
I have. Eyes gouged out, tongue cut out, privates cut off, and the back of their ankles cut so they can't do nothing but flop around on the ground in agony. Sometimes they last for days before they die.
I don't mean to stare, mister, but are you Jamie McAllister?
I am.
I got a long letter for you over at the office. It come in on the stage last week. The last stage we've seen, by the way. It's been handed from driver to driver for nearly 2 months. It's from Valley, Colorado.
Jamie started to get up, and the marshal waved him back into his chair.
You eat your meal. I'll go over and get the letter and bring it to you. It'd be an honor.
Jimmy was just digging into his food when the marshal returned and handed him the well-worn envelope. He put on his reading glasses and tore open the envelope. As he read, his face hardened. He quickly scanned the letter, then read it more slowly the second time. Jamie folded the letter, put it back in the envelope, and tucked it away in his pocket.
Trouble, Mac?
Yeah. Bad trouble.
Jamie explained the contents of the letter.
If they stay on the trail the posse followed, they'll probably come through here. There ain't jack shit west of here for hundreds of miles, except maybe some way stations, providing the Apaches haven't killed everybody there and burned the buildings.
You want to head for home, Mac?
There's nothing I can do back home. But I think I'll postpone my trip into the Muggyomes. I want to stick around and see if these bastards come through here. I want to be waiting for them.
Mac,
no,
I...
you boys go on. We'll hook up again someday. This is something I have to do myself.
I understand. We'll stick around long enough to rest the horses and resupply, and then we'll be on our way.
Jamie finished his meal and then left the table to walk outside and sit by himself and read the letter again.
Are we just going to ride off and leave Mr. McAllister here alone?
That's the way he wants it, boy.
Don't hardly say him right.
It's just something he's got to do by himself, boy.
Well, it's just that I have this feeling we'll never see him again.
Well, maybe so, maybe not. But he'll always be your friend, and that's something to value, right?
I reckon.
Mac's carrying a load of grief right now, boy. Mayhaps he's thinking that if he had stayed home, this awfulness might not have happened. When it comes to family, a man gets to thinking them kind of thoughts when tragedy befalls.
He just looks, well, so alone.
Sometimes it's best to stand alone, boy. You think about that when you get a quiet moment. I'll talk to you fellas later.
Where are you going?
I'm going to find me a bottle. Crawl up in the loft of the stable and get myself drunk.
I wonder what Mr. Mac is going to do.
What's Mac going to do? Why, he's going to wait for them trash who hurt his family. And he's going to kill them. That's what he's going to do. It's what's expected of a man. Leastways, out here it is.
It won't be that way for long. I seen that coming last post I was on back east. Now they got fancy lawyers and doodled-up judges who say a man ain't got the right to deal with justice to them who's done him a hurt. They say only the courts has that right.
Be a mighty sorry damn day when that kind of thinking takes hold out here.
Well, it's coming. Bet on that.
I hope I ain't around to see no shame and disgrace like that. But I tell you one thing. Out yonder sits a man that won't pay no attention to such foolishness.
The stage finally made it through the day that Canby, Red, Logan, and Rick pulled out. Jamie had written a letter to his family back in Valley, explaining where he was and that he had received their letter about Jolene and Kathy Lou McKenzie. He gave the letter to the stage driver, explaining what had happened and asking if he would pass it along.
I'll do better than that, Mr. McAllister. I'll have a telegram sent when I get back to New Mexico, telling them you're okay and a letter will follow.
I'd appreciate it.
Consider it done. And if you need some help dealing with those bastards, you just holler. There'll be men aplenty come running.
Jamie smiled his thanks and the stage rolled out, heading back east. Jamie would simply wait in the cowtown and see what happened next. Matthew had spread the word to all lawmen west of Valley. Hundreds of Dodgers had gone out to marshals and sheriffs. They started appearing tacked onto trees and telegraph poles. And when the rapists and kidnappers came out of hiding and started to move, they began seeing the wanted posters everywhere.
We gotta head south.
There ain't nothing south except Apaches.
But northwest and east, there ain't nothing but a hangman's rope for us. We'll head for Mexico and wait it out.
We're damn near out of everything.
There's a little cow town about 2 days' ride from here. I think it's called Holbrook.
We'll head for there. Let's ride. I can smell freedom, boys. We're almost clear. I can smell it.
Jamie sat on the bench in front of a dry goods store and watched a lone rider come into town and tie up in front of the saloon. The traveler's clothing was mud splattered, and his horse was weary. The rider wore two guns tied down low, which meant absolutely nothing, for a lot of men wore two guns, including Jamie. But there was something about the man. Jamie rose from the bench and walked across the street, glancing at the brand on the horse. He didn't recognize it. Deciding at the last second not to enter the saloon, Jamie took a seat in a chair in front of an apothecary shop and waited. The rider came out of the saloon after only a few minutes and took a gunny sack from behind his saddle, then walked over to the general store. He left there with the sack bulging with only enough supplies to last one man about a week. Jamie relaxed. Unless the men had split up, and he didn't think that likely, this was just a drifting rider. He watched the man ride out of town. About an hour later, another lone rider came into town. Just as the first rider, his clothing was dirty and mud splattered, and his horse weary. Jamie perked up. The man did exactly what the first rider had done. Saloon first, then to the general store, and left with about the same amount of supplies in a sack. About an hour after that, another rider came drifting in from the same direction as the other two. Mud-splattered clothing, weary horse. He went first to the saloon, then over to the general store, and bought the same amount of supplies. As he was riding out, heading in the same direction the other two had taken, Jamie was saddling Sundown. He waited for a few minutes, then swung in behind the man, staying well back. Jamie trailed him for several miles, then stopped and picketed Sundown near a wash that still held a trickle of water. He took a drink from his canteen and settled down amid a jumble of rocks that were near the trail after checking carefully for sleeping rattlesnakes. Jamie had no physical descriptions of the men who had attacked his daughter and granddaughter, only their names. He had to be sure before he confronted the men, and he hadn't worked out in his mind how he was going to do that. But right now, he could wait. Russell Clay almost had a heart attack when he finally learned what had taken place in Valley. For several minutes, he actually thought he was going to die. He had to will his heart to stop its wild racing. He dismissed his trusted manservant and sat for a time in near shock. He poured a brandy and drank it down.
Oh, fools. Ignorant, redneck fools. Assaulting and raping Jamie's daughter and granddaughter. If he has to, the man will spend the rest of his life tracking you down. I didn't mean for this to happen. As God is my witness, I didn't. I was only trying to protect myself. God. Oh, don't bring God into this, Roscoe. Not after all that you've done.
Then Russell thought of his sister. He hadn't seen her in years, but he knew she was living in San Francisco under the name of Andrea Petri. He wondered what her reaction would be when she learned of the debacle in Valley.
Rape! Dear God in heaven, did those fools go crazy?
The shyster lawyer who had brought Andrea Petri the news said nothing. He knew only too well how volatile the woman's temper was, and if the truth be known, she frightened him. He had never before known such a ruthless person.
Jamie Ian McAllister will track them to the end of the earth if he has to. And if one of them talks,
the authorities will trace it back to me.
Here, drink this and calm down, and then you must leave.
Yes, yes, of course. We must have no further contact for a time.
That would be wise.
The lawyer nodded his head and left.
What a pity. He was such a useful man, too.
The lawyer walked four blocks, then dropped stone dead to the street. Jamie seemed to rise out of the earth like some demon out of the pits of hell. The horse reared up in fright, and Pete Drew felt himself jerked from the saddle and slammed to the ground. When Pete could focus, he was looking into the cold eyes of a big man with gray hair. Then he saw the muzzle of a pistol.
Name, and you better get it right the first time.
Pete Drew!
Lord God, mister, I ain't done nothing to you.
You raped my daughter and granddaughter and tried to kill Ben F. Washington.
It was a mistake. We didn't mean to do that. I'm sorry it happened. It was just one of them things that happened.
You son of a bitch.
It wasn't my idea. It was Stone's idea. I had to go along with it. If I hadn't have humped them women, the rest of them would have laughed at me.
You know what you're going to do next.
No.
Kiss the devil's ass.
No!
Now, where the hell do you suppose Drew went to?
Jack Wallace felt the hammer blow in his chest and knocked him sprawling.
Huh?
Jack looked down at his blood-stained shirt front and wondered briefly what the hell had happened. Then he lowered his head to the ground and died. Billy Carnes jumped to his feet and made to grab for his gun. Marcus Hinton looked wildly all around him, certain they were under attack from the Apaches. He began firing his pistols in all directions, hitting nothing but evening air. Marcus was knocked off his boots, hitting the rocky ground hard. He looked stupidly down at the spreading stain on his shirt.
Well, I'll be damned.
Sterling Drake spun round and round like a child's top, firing his pistols until Jamie's bullet cut him down. Stone Gibson, Nate Clapton, Jeff Hooks, and Carter Young made it to their horses and galloped off toward the north. Armor was left alone.
Come out and fight me like a man!
Over here!
But there was no one to be seen.
How about over here, punk?
Eric whirled around just in time to catch a bullet in his chest. He stumbled backward, lost his footing, and sat down on his butt. Jamie appeared at the edge of the camp.
It's you, damn ya!
Who hired you to attack Ben Washington?
Go to hell!
What were you looking for? You don't have long. Why not tell the truth for once in your life?
I got a right to know who killed me!
Jamie M. McAllister.
Them women up north?
My daughter and granddaughter.
Oh, bad mistake, wasn't it?
You're dying because of it.
You gonna bury me proper?
I doubt it.
That ain't decent.
Neither are you.
Promise me you'll bury me so the varmints can't get at me, and I'll tell you what I know.
You better make it fast.
A woman in San Francisco hired me and the four I rode with. Man in Denver hired the others.
They have names?
Armor fell over on the sand and didn't move.
You dead?
You cold-hearted bastard! You're a devil!
You got a shovel around here.
I ain't never seen no one as hard as you.
I've heard that before. Can't find no shovel? I'll pile rocks on you.
Thanks.
The ones who got away?
Stone Gibson, Nate Clapton, Jeff Hooks, Carter Young. Hey, McAllister?
What?
You read some words over me?
I'll say something. You have folks that might give a damn about you?
No. Pa threw me out of the house years ago.
Why?
I raped my sister.